There are some basic reasons why the human race has created religion. And probably the most popular reason is to find the answer to the question, what happens after we die? That's something a lot of people seem to worry about. But an equally important question seems to be, why are we here? And the obvious question that comes after that is, where did we come from? A lot of people wonder about those things too. Not only are we curious about where we came from, we're also curious about where the world came from. Who or what created it? How long is it going to last? Why does it look the way it does? All those kind of questions. Those are all questions that have challenged mystics and philosophers and scientists ever since we realized that there's more to us and more to the world than meets the eye. But what I find really interesting is the fact that even though there are a lot of theories about what the answers to all these questions happen to be, and lots of stories people have made up throughout history to justify their theory, there's no way to be able to tell which answer is right and which one is wrong. And if everybody would just let everybody else believe whatever story they wanted to believe, there wouldn't be a problem. The real problem comes in the fact that we don't call our ideas or our stories theories about the afterlife and the nature of the universe. We call our theories religions. That's where the problem comes in. And in the last 5,000 years or so, there have been more people killed because of which theory they believed or didn't believe than for any other reason in history. That's why I think we do ourselves a great disservice when we try to figure out absolute answers to these kinds of unanswerable questions. Because the only thing that really matters spiritually, not religiously, is how we treat one another and how we treat ourselves in the here and now. And religion, traditional religion, frequently gets in the way of that. And if we do that right, by which I mean if we treat ourselves and everyone else with kindness, compassion, love, and respect, no matter what religion we happen to believe in, that will demonstrate the mature spiritual understanding that wherever we came from, whatever it looked like before we got here, that we're all here for the same reason, no matter what our race, religion, or anything else. And that will show the universe that we are ready as a race to move on to the next step of our spiritual evolution, wherever that is and whatever it happens to look like. That's why this morning I want to talk about how we deal with a certain subset of these stories. I want to talk a little bit about creation stories this morning. You see, every religion, every culture, every philosophy has its own version of how the world began and how human beings showed up on Earth. And some of the stories are pretty strange from a Western perspective, where most of us came from, while some of these stories are really beautiful. But one thing all creation stories have in common is that no one was there to see it happen. All right, people don't want to admit that, except whoever or whatever it was that set it in motion. There are no pictures, no YouTube, no videos, none of this, but there are lots and lots of stories. Now, another thing they have in common is all of these stories have a mythological basis instead of a scientific basis, because mythology was all they had. Our ancestors didn't have telescopes to look out and see what was going on. They didn't have microscopes and all those things. But what they did have was a deep desire to know where they came from. They had an almost childlike view of the world around them, thunder, lightning, earthquakes, all these things, and they had a very vivid imagination to explain how it all came about. And once they set that imagination in motion based on whatever customs or natural surroundings they were familiar with, the stories started to take on a life of their own. And the stories became part of the culture of the individual tribes, groups, nations, whatever it was, that people were willing to die to defend. That's how serious these stories were. Now, these stories were passed down from generation to generation by word of mouth initially, but later in written form, and they became the sacred texts of all the different religions until history and mythology, for a lot of people, became virtually inseparable. So people in the desert would have desert stories going back as far as anyone could remember. People who lived on islands would have stories of how their island rose up from the sea out of nowhere, and they'd have magic fish and all these different things. People who lived in the jungle would have stories telling of animal gods that turned into human beings. But even when these stories eventually conflicted with new scientific evidence that showed the story itself to be impossible, the mythology remained. The mythology remained within the hearts and minds of a large segment of the population, because there's something about these stories that touches a very deep mystical part of people's inner being. Which is why, as hard as it is to believe here in the 21st century, here in the Western world, in the United States of America, an estimated 30% of Americans, I think the figure I saw was 34%, claim to believe that the earth is less than 8,000 years old. It's really true. They aren't dumb. They aren't misguided. They just have a need to believe in something that fits their spiritual beliefs, or else their spiritual beliefs fall apart. It's a very, very fragile house of cards because they aren't ready for their spirituality to fall apart. That's why we need to understand that there are a lot of people in the world who will give up science before they give up their own personal beliefs about the spiritual nature of the world. Because they believe that when the two collide, when the spiritual and the scientific collide, they have to choose the answer that they think God wants them to choose. That's the reason they do it. But without taking sides or criticizing anyone's belief, that never helps anyone, I'm going to tell you this. The best spiritual solution is always to find a truth that fits both science and spirituality. That's why the very first sentence in The Science of Mind, what we call our textbook, says, "We all look forward to the day when science and religion shall walk hand in hand through the visible to the invisible." The very, very first sentence. That's why Dr. King, Martin Luther King Jr., said, "Science investigates, religion interprets. Science gives man knowledge, which is power. Religion gives man wisdom, which is control. Science deals mainly with facts," Dr. King says. "Religion deals mainly with values." With values. You see, the truth is, science and spirituality are not rivals. Science may show us the outer world and explain it with reason and logic and experimentation, but the real meaning behind those facts has to include something deeper. It has to include the deeper awareness that we have that flows through our heart and our soul when we allow it to. A great example is music. Scientifically speaking, the notes that we hear are nothing more than vibrations that were started by a string or a drum or whatever it is that can be measured, imitated, even written down. And these vibrations travel through the air and they stimulate our eardrum, which causes an electrical impulse into our brain that we interpret as music. That's what it is, scientifically speaking. But the power of the music, when we hear a Beethoven symphony, when we hear Chuck Berry doing one of his licks, he died this week, I know, well, really a loss to the music world, that comes from what it does to us that can't be measured. That can't be measured. That's where these stories are. In the same way, these same stories of creation shouldn't be analyzed or explained by simply looking at whether they were historically or scientifically possible. Instead, they should be seen and understood and accepted for their wisdom from what they tell us about ourselves. That's where the value lies. Now, let me talk about a couple of these stories because I'm really interested in spiritual religious history. Some of you may not know about some of this. The creation story that most of us are familiar with is the story told in Genesis. Obviously, it's a story that's common to the Jewish tradition, the Christian tradition, and the Muslim tradition. Of course, if you read the first two chapters of Genesis, you start to realize there are two creation stories that are actually different. You can look it up and when you get home. But if you go online and you Google creation stories, and I have a book at home called Parallel Myths. It's great. It goes back across all the historical stories. Or you get on Amazon and you order any number of books about mythology, what you'll discover is that a lot of the details of Genesis actually came from stories that predated the writing of Genesis. There were creation stories that Genesis borrowed from hundreds and hundreds of years before the Bible, the Old Testament, was written. Now, Hinduism is a very ancient religion. It has several creation stories. In one of them, it talks about how Brahman, who was the creator, assumed different bodies during his meditations. So he assumed a body of darkness and the night was born, and he assumed a body of light and the daylight was born, and he assumed a body of thought and meditation, and human beings, thinking beings, were born. He took on all the different bodies, and the world came out from him. There's another real pretty Hindu story that tells how Brahman was lonely because he was the only thing that existed. He was non-physical. He was a spiritual being. So he took on physical form to create the physical world. And he split the temporary physical body that he had into two parts, male and female, Adam and Eve, Adam and Steve, Adam and whatever it happens to be, anyway. And the two of them came together, okay, and created the human race. Now, this is where the story gets really interesting. I love this. After coupling with her counterpart, creation stories have a lot of coupling. That's how everything, you know, begets and begats and all that kind of stuff. The female started wondering if she and her partner should be together because they were both the same being. So the morality stuff started coming into it, sort of like in the Garden of Eden. So she tried to avoid the male by turning into a cow, and the male turned into a bull, and then they coupled in cows, and then she turned into a horse, a mare, and he turned into a stallion, and she kept turning into different things, and that's how the earth was populated. That's their creation story. I also like the fact that a lot of these creation stories do not have a male creator. That's a great idea. The Maori tribe in New Zealand said the earth was born from the union of Mother Earth and Father Sky. There you go. Other stories talk about Gaia, the earth mother that was the creator, the female. But to me, the most beautiful stories of all come from the African traditions and the Native American traditions in North America. There's a story from Madagascar in Africa about the creator who was watching his daughter make little dolls out of clay. She was making them into little dolls and playing, and he wanted to surprise her, so he breathed life into them, and they became humans, and his daughter became Mother Earth. Beautiful story. Some of the Native American stories talk about a hole in the earth where people came up from the Middle Earth to populate this one, and they have people coming down from the sky, which is where a lot of the UFO stories came from. A lot of these stories are very detailed and have, you know, a large cast of characters with a lot of different gods and people doing all sorts of things. The question here is, what are these stories saying? Because there are a lot of them, and why should we be interested in what they're telling us? Are they just superstitions, like all the different stories, all right? The answer is, they're not trying to tell us where we came from or where the world came from. They're telling us where the process of life itself comes from every single day. Every single day. You see, each one of these stories is not about some god or gods who created the world. They're about the creative process itself. The creative process itself. And the process of creation is not just one single thing that happened a long time ago and set stuff in motion. It's something that happens again and again and again every single day of our life. Not because there's anything special about us, but simply because creation is the natural process of life and intelligence combining and evolving and growing. And we are an expression of life and of intelligence. Everything that exists in the physical world, in the past, the present, or in the future, has a beginning and an end. And that beginning comes from consciousness. It is maintained as long as the consciousness is maintained. And when consciousness shifts, it either shifts, the thing itself shifts, or changes, or it disappears. That's the way life works. That's the way it works in the world at large. It's the way it works in our life. Or as Dr. Holmes writes in The Science of Mind, he says, creation is always beginning but never ending. The slightest thought of intelligence sets power in motion through the law, producing a corresponding thing. Things may come and things may go, but creation goes on forever. There will always be a manifestation of divine ideas. Those divine ideas, those creative ideas, come into the world through us. Through us. Whatever our personal spiritual belief happens to be, one of the greatest spiritual lessons that we need to learn is that nothing is ever permanent. No relationship, no job, no situation. Everything changes. The only question is, are we going to have a say in how that change occurs and how it affects us? Are we going to make a conscious decision about what stays and goes in our life or what the final result looks like? Or are we going to just sort of let things happen however they happen. Are we going to let circumstances create our life? Are we going to let our past define us? Are we going to let other people direct us or control us? The answer to all of these questions depends upon whether we see ourselves as the creator in our life or the thing being created. Whether we see ourselves as the creator in our life or the thing being created. Or another way of saying it, I heard this once, I loved it. It said, even though we are powerful by nature, we are powerless by choice. Even though we are powerful by nature, we are powerless by choice. We have to remember that the entire world, our entire life, is an effect. And like it or not, our consciousness is creating it at the level of cause. Now, if things are going well in our life, we're usually okay with that. Whatever we're creating, it's working. But sometimes the world or life feels like it's completely out of control. Sometimes we feel like events are happening and we don't have anything to do with it. That's where the wisdom of the creation stories come in. You see, everything that goes on in our life has a beginning. It all has a beginning. But a lot of times we don't realize where the beginning was until we're already in it. We didn't know it at the time, but later on we can look back and we can see this chain of causation, whether we're caught up in a health issue, a money issue, a relationship issue, whatever it is. When we started doing it, we didn't really think about where our actions might lead. But when we stop and think back and we see that chain of causation that brought us to where we are now, all most people can think about at that point is, I wish I had done something better. I wish I had made a better decision back then, and I wouldn't be in the mess I'm in now. But what they don't think about, and this is what's important, is that the moment they are in is just as powerful as that moment was back then. They have just as much power, even in the midst of things, then as they did back then. Something I noticed in all these creation stories is every story starts out with either a void or chaos. One of those two things. Either there's nothing waiting for something to happen, or there's chaos waiting for order to appear, all of it. And right in the middle of the chaos and the void and the confusion is intelligence. Intelligence. That's what we call the creator. So the void isn't intelligent. The chaos isn't intelligent. Only we, the consciousness that exists in the middle of it, is intelligent. And that's what does the creating. That's what we are in our life. But we have to act intelligently in order to create an intelligent result. So let me talk for a minute about what it actually means to be a creative intelligence. One of the first things this power does in all of these stories, this creative intelligence, is to differentiate between the light and the dark. Almost every story. It creates light so it can see what's going on. So that's what we need to do in the beginning. Not just in the beginning back then when we created where we are, but in the beginning now, in the beginning now, and the beginning now. When all we see around us is darkness and confusion, the light we need to create is the light of awareness. Awareness. We need to look at whatever we're dealing with and to separate it in our own consciousness, to separate the lies from the truth, to separate the rumors from the facts, to separate the fear from the faith, to separate the simple from the complicated. That's what we need to do. Simplify. Simplify. For example, look at what's going on in the news today, all right? Both internationally and at home and the politics. I would say that qualifies as chaos, don't you? Anybody agree with me? Okay? So can we stand there, can we look at war and still see peace? That's the question. Can we look at poverty and still see abundance? Can we look at politics and still see sanity and cooperation? Even if we can't see it out there, we have to see it in here first, okay? In the beginning, we have to see it in here. So here's the question. Can we stand in the middle of whatever chaos, whatever challenge, whatever confusion we see and say with perfect calm, perfect faith, and perfect divine knowing, let there be light? Can we do that when we're watching the news, the politics, all of that stuff? If we can't, then we're never going to be able to create anything better than what we have created so far. Now, one other theme that's common to most of the creation stories is the part where the Creator intends to create a perfect world, but something goes wrong. Very interesting. All-powerful Creator and something goes wrong. Somebody eats an apple they're not supposed to eat. Somebody fools around with somebody they're not supposed to fool around with, you know, whatever it is. Some angel goes bad and tries to take control. All of these things are in these stories. Apparently, even God gets blindsided every so often. This is not meant to show that things never turn out right. It simply means that the creative power, whether we're talking about God or ourselves, one and the same, can't always control the result. We can only control our part of the creative process. But if we do that much, if we just take control of our inner knowing, of our intelligence, of our awareness, and focus on the truth, things will turn out well. You see, from the perspective of a creative intelligence, which is what we are, there are no wrong decisions, there are only decisions. And each decision made at each individual moment has the potential to create an entirely new chain of causation, an entirely new situation. All of our choices lead to results. Results lead to new choices, which create new results. That's where the creative process lies. We have to remember that creation is an ongoing evolutionary process. So we are always in the state of becoming. We're in the state of becoming healthy. We're in the state of becoming happy. We're in the state of becoming prosperous. All the time, all the time. And as we create new beginnings in our life over and over, we need to continually release those things that have ended, that no longer suit us any longer. Just like our body releases cells so we can grow from being a child to an adult. If you think of that catchy little bumper sticker phrase, today is the first day of the rest of your life, everybody's heard that, and you sort of shift it a little to think, this moment is the first moment of the rest of my day, you start to get a feel for what it feels like to be the creator of our own universe. Everything that happens from this moment on, and this moment, and this moment, is pure possibility. Completely unformed, just like it was in the beginning. And the intelligence that exists in each one of us right now is the same as it has always been, because it is infinite and it never ever changes. So anything is possible for us from this moment on. Any revelation, any healing, any solution that we might need in our life. But we have to stop waiting for something outside of us to do it unto us. In fact, once each and every one of us makes the conscious decision, and it needs to be conscious, to do what we're able to do, which is to create all things new, then we're going to be able to look back at what we have created and see that it is good, as it says in the story. And then just like God, we can take a day or two off at the end. So anyway, because it is good, and so are you, and so am I. So this is the truth in your life. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's just take a moment now. Take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's just know this. Life is eternally beginning. Not just life in general, but my life and your life. This moment is a new beginning of everything that I am going to create, not just between now and my death, but far beyond that, because I am a timeless being. We are timeless intelligence, constantly creating all things new, and that gives us great power. We are never trapped in a negative situation. We are never helpless unless we allow ourselves to be. We are never in a situation that we cannot change for the better. ever. Every relationship, every circumstance, every event, whether it's in our immediate vicinity or in the world at large, can be changed. And as each one of us takes responsibility for shifting our own consciousness, our consciousness joins with others who are expressing the intelligence that they are, and what we create is better than what has ever been before. We are able to do that. We are able to create a paradise on earth where all are at peace, all are fed, all people honor life and honor one another. That is our nature. That is where we have to look and see the light of a new beginning, even where darkness appears to prevail. So knowing this, I am grateful. I'm grateful for this awareness. I'm grateful for the intelligence that is in every person everywhere. I'm grateful for the kindness and the love that every one of us has the ability to express. And I am grateful for the world as it could be. I am grateful for the best of life that we are able to create. I am grateful for the best of all people joining together to create this experience in a beautiful way for everyone everywhere. This is my truth. I accept it and I release it into consciousness, letting it be so. Join me in saying, and so it is.